Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi guys, it's me, Julia. Today's episode is a special one. Sammy Spalter is the co-founder of wellness brand Form. Her and I had such a meaningful conversation in person here in Austin. We chat about her weight loss journey and how she lost over 80 pounds. We talk about how she met her wonderful husband, Andrew, and the non-negotiables she commits to in order to pour into the relationship she has with herself. Towards the end of the episode, Sammy got super vulnerable with me about losing her mother a little over a year ago and what that grief journey has been like for her. This episode was so special, and Sammy is just so wonderful. Here's the episode. I'm so excited to be chatting with today's guest. I feel like I stalked her online for a long time and I knew she had to be on the podcast. She is the co-founder of the wellness brand Form. She is also a Forbes 30 Under 30 honoree. Sammy Spalter, welcome to Pretty Much Done.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. We have been planning this for a while. Yeah. And I'm just so grateful that we finally found today. And even in just getting to know you this morning, I know we have so much to tap into.
I feel the same. And I feel like I've been like admiring your content from afar. And I'm like, how did I even find her? But I think when I was like plotting my move to Austin, I was looking at like, what's the vibe in Austin? Who are the girlies in Austin? And I think I found you and your husband. I was like, they make it seem so lovely.
It is so lovely. I feel like Austin is just, especially for us coming from LA.
Yeah.
Austin to us immediately, it wasn't really like if we're going to move to Austin. It was more of a when. And I think we were so intentional with that move of like, if we're going to move, we're going to buy the house. We're going to really root ourselves and ground ourselves in the community and just invest so much more energy than what we were giving LA. Yeah.
Totally. Or even like what LA started to probably give you.
Yeah. I think post-COVID LA, just we just had a different mindset around it. And LA is an amazing place. Like, I will never talk shit about LA because truly living most of my 20s in LA did wonders for me. I was surrounded by people who were just so passionate about whatever they were doing. I want to say, like, I know this sounds really bold, but I found myself in LA. Like, I was really struggling when I initially moved, and it was right after I graduated college. And I think, like, just by nature of everyone focusing on their health, focusing on their career, really just being so ambitious, it's contagious.
It's so interesting that you say that, because everyone has this thing where they say, like, no one in LA works.
Which is also kind of true, but I think that's because it's not what we think of as work, right? I think our generation has kind of proved, like, you don't need to be in this corporate environment to quote unquote work. You can actually make work out of anything.
Yeah.
And that was definitely what I was surrounded by in LA. And I think after I graduated college and moving there, most of my college friends were taking a very typical route, which I felt very other than because I didn't. And my brother and I actually ended up starting an influencer marketing agency, which also at the time was like, what's an influencer?
Totally.
Like, we were kind of before our time. It was initially started with more like ambassador programs too. But I remember just being in such awe of people in LA because I'd actually gone to school in South Carolina. And in the South, a lot of people, again, like very massive generalization, but I felt through my experience that you kind of need to fit in, right? Like there was more of this mold. I was truly the only Jewish person at my tiny college. And in that, I was an anomaly. But even me being like a curvy brunette was different.
Yeah. It's so interesting because I went to college in Orange County and I was 208 pounds. Wow. I was like Miss Personality. Yes. Definitely like the cool girl who was like from LA, but not the one who was in Delta Gamma. You know, I wasn't like
doing all of that. And so we have similar situations, but in different places.
Yes. Orange County is like the south Orange of County. California.
Yeah, I know. It was so crazy to me. I also was like the only Jewish person. And I was like, oh, okay, all right. Like, yes. I remember calling my mom to be like, Mom, can you take me shopping? I need to buy Toms.
Wait. Yeah, I had three pairs of Toms, white, red, and black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, obsessed. I can't wear like Jeffrey Campbell's to the parties. I have to wear Toms.
So in South Carolina, it was me telling my dad, I need to wear Lily Pulitzer and Jack Rogers sandals for Rush. I actually did the whole sorority thing. And even in hindsight, thinking back during our like sorority rituals, which were these like monthly kind of like growing through like the traditions, I was in Zeta.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, they had me like put my hand on a Bible and everyone said, Our Father, which is a prayer that like everyone else knew out loud. And I'm looking around me and I talked to our house mom after. I'm like, I am Jewish. And that was really uncomfortable for me.
What she said?
And she was like, oh my gosh, you were the first person to ever bring this to my attention.
How was South Carolina on your radar? I feel like I didn't. Yeah. It wasn't on my, okay. Until Southern Charm. Now it's on my radar.
No, I mean, this is really funny. My Jewish mother at the time was like, you're going where for college? And I think I was different in the sense that my mom and dad had roots in Dallas, Texas. And at the time when I was looking at schools, my mom was living in Malibu and my brother was already at LMU, which is in Los Angeles. Yeah. Looking at California kind of felt like I was following in Frankie's footsteps, mm-hmm. my brother. And I was always known as Frankie's little sister. I really wanted to do my own thing.
Yeah.
And whenever I'd go to Dallas, I really admired SMU, which was just like a really cute campus. Totally. Like, honestly, this sounds so lame, but as an 18-year-old, I cared how cute the campus was.
Yes. Yes.
And I didn't necessarily want to be in Dallas with my entire extended family. So I'm like, okay, Dad, like, my dad was kind of like my college counselor. You know, I didn't have anyone helping me. My dad is like, let's go on a road trip and figure out where you want to go to school.
Cute.
We knew it wasn't going to be SMU because I wanted to go somewhere that felt new and that I didn't have roots. So we started looking at the Carolinas and I went to a school called Wofford, which literally no one's heard of unless you're into like D1 basketball. We're the smallest D1 school. It was, I think, like 80% Greek life, 20% athletes. And even the athletes were in Greek life too. Uh-huh. And I'll never forget going on campus. My dad and I were doing our tour and the Zeta girls were actually having an event. And one of them came up to me on the tour and invited me. And I'm like, okay, like, can I bring my dad? And they said, yes. So we ended up going to their philanthropy event. And after my dad and I left, he goes, those are girls that you want to surround yourself with. Like, those are sweet girls who care to know you. And I think being raised in Boca, which is in Florida, but is essentially Long Island.
Sure.
Like, it's all New Yorkers. And my high school years were tough. Like, I think it was just, again, a lot of me trying to fit in, but with a very different crowd. So to feel the warmth of the South was an immediate feeling of, okay, I feel comfy here.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mom was like, literally, what the fuck? But my dad saw it and he saw how happy I was. And truly, like, my sorority sisters, half of my bridesmaids were some of my pledge sisters. We've stayed so close and they really did care to know and they cared to get to know me and everything about me. And I felt the same for my professors and everyone. But again, I was such an anomaly.
Yeah.
And I think I really took it upon myself to, I ended up becoming the president of Hillel, which is not hard when you're the only Jew at the school.
They were like, it's her.
Yeah, literally it was me and Dr. Green, who was the CFO of Denny's. He was a professor. He did finance at Wofford, but he was also the CFO of a huge company that was based in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Wild.
Random. The two of us ran Hillel at Wofford, and I'll never forget Passover hosting a Seder to explain to all of my friends and not look at them and call them ignorant, but really take it upon myself and introduce them to what Judaism is and how welcoming Jewish people are, and sharing why I call my whole family on Friday evenings for Shabbat and how that is like such a beautiful reflection of our week. And I think that to me was a newfound love for being Jewish too, and not looking at myself as such an other, but really embracing that my differences are what's going to allow all these people who some have never met a Jewish person in their life to open their eyes and have this more worldly view.
Yeah. First, I want to like applaud your dad for saying that that is such a wonderful value to instill in your daughter, to be like, these are people that you want to surround yourself with. Yeah. That's really special. And I think that it almost feels like he instilled in you this feeling of looking for home.
Yes.
And I think that's really cool. That feels like a through line for you. I mean, we haven't like dived deep enough, but you found home in South Carolina, then you find yourself in LA, and then you find yourself here in Austin building a home.
Yeah. And I think to that point, like, that's such a generous reflection. Thank you. I feel like it is the people. I think I'm realizing the older I get, I am a bit more introverted than I give myself credit for.
Yeah.
But I feel my best self when I'm surrounded by people who see me the way I know I want to be seen.
I don't know if that's like a millennial plight. I feel the same exact way. Yeah. Where it's like, I think that there are these traditions of how you're supposed to live your life. And I think that for me, like, as a Jewish woman, I heard from my mom and sister, yeah, like, get married, have kids, like, right, do the thing. And I spent so much of my 20s trying to do that. And now I realize there are other ways of living life, to your point of, like, people in LA are ambitious. People can move to Austin. People can be 30 and single. You know, there are different,
yes,
ways. And I think that you want to find your tribe who, like, accepts that, or make people accept that about you.
Absolutely. And I love that you brought up being 30 and single. One of my best friends here, her name's Nikki. We just celebrated her 30th birthday and she's single. And like, when I think about my friends, Nikki, like, the quickest thing that comes to mind is like, she's a freaking catch.
Yeah.
She is stunning. She has the best personality. She feels like home to me, for what we were saying. She also comes from the most loving family. They're like my second family here in Austin. And we were talking about how powerful it actually is that,
yeah,
she's 30. She knows who the fuck she is and she knows who she wants,
yeah,
and what she's deserving of. I met Andrew, my husband. We met when I was 24 years old.
He was 26.
And like, truly the timing was perfect for us. But in hindsight, there was a lot of work that we were individually doing in our mid-20s to figure out who we were and where we're going, which I don't think ever stops, right? Like, I'm 28 now, he's 30, and it's still going. And
totally.
It's still this beautiful thing of evolving next to someone and still having that, like, independent focus on self.
Yeah.
But should we have met when I was 30 in a couple of years and maybe he was 32, it is this more grounded, real firm sense of identity versus the 20s being this accelerated decade of every week was a different shade of me, truly.
Yes, yeah. And in your 20s, you're spending so much time trying to get it all done because you're afraid that you're going to just die when you turn 30,
yes,
if you don't have these things accomplished.
Yeah.
And it's not that. At 30, finally, I feel like when I turned 30, it hit me where I'm like, I don't know anything. I'm figuring it all out and it's okay. And I'm just going along on this ride.
I love that so much. And like, honoring that is so much better than looking at it as like your cup's half empty.
Absolutely.
I think truly, like, knowing that we're all guessing and knowing that none of us actually know what the hell we're doing,
yes,
is like a really important affirmation.
I'm curious about your journey. I feel like you graduated college, you got to LA. Is this around the time where you were like, I'm going to try and prioritize my health? And did LA like bring that out in you where you, yes, were like, everyone around me is drinking green juice and going to...
Oh my gosh. That was something so incredibly contagious about LA, was people actually talked about their health. Where when I was in college, not only was I an anomaly for being curvy, brunette, Jewish, but I was also an anomaly for having a way slower metabolism and like different genetics than everyone else. I, yes, was surrounded... my best friends who were just built differently and in that could treat their bodies differently.
Yeah.
And there was definitely a moment in college I'll never forget. After my freshman year, I went home and my family was planning a trip to Mexico. So this is one semester in college. I gained 30 pounds.
Wow.
Got home, tried on all of my bikinis from my big bikini drawer in Florida, and truly looked in the mirror, called my dad upstairs, and I'm crying to him. And I'm like, what happened to me? Like, what did I do? And he goes, look, we're going to handle this. We're going to get through it together. But this is a health thing. This isn't like a physical, you need to lose weight to look better thing. This is a, oh my God, you literally just gained 30 pounds in a couple of months. After that year, I spent the summer doing a very extreme form of dieting and hustle workout culture that there was no way I was going to be able to maintain mm-hmm. back at Wofford. So I ended up losing the 30 and then gaining more than that by the time I graduated wow. college. So by the time I graduated college, I was 200 pounds and moved straight to LA. And
by the way, the worst place to be 200 pounds is someone who was 200.
Oh my gosh. And like, I didn't even know I weighed 200 pounds.
You never know.
You never know. Like, I knew I could feel like certain parts of me that were like super squishy.
Yeah.
I love that you said this earlier. Like, and I want to hear more about your journey too, because I'm sure there's so many common threads, but I never looked at myself as less than because of my weight.
Wow.
I never did.
Always did.
Okay.
That was my plight.
I had such identity in my personality and like what I offered as I've always had this same personality. I've always had this same smile.
Yeah.
And I think I took so much pride in that I didn't even feel like I needed the hot body. I remember saying to one of my friends in college, like, who was really aware of her body in a very like obsessive way. And in hindsight, like it wasn't healthy
sure.
for me to even like hear that or for her living her life that way. But in hindsight, listening and thinking back to this conversation of her saying like men can get away with some extra pounds, but women actually need to be rail thin. And I was hearing this and I remember saying out loud to her, oh, no, no, no. Like, I think women are supposed to be curvy and we're supposed to, you know, this was the era of the Kardashians. I'm
right.
like idolizing Kim
right.
and like all that she's doing for us that weren't genetically put into this world stick thin. And it really wasn't until my first doctor's appointment when I did move to LA that they weighed me and I was over 200 pounds. And I think it was more so me hearing that.
Yeah.
That, you know, I'm just thinking back to that day of hearing her say the number out loud, my doctor who didn't know me yet, didn't know what I was struggling with in like complete disassociation with my body and just having so much pride in who I was as a personality. Mm-hmm. But hearing that, I remember same appointment asking her, is there a nutritionist I can work with? Is there someone who can help me? How do I change this?
Yeah.
Because for the last 4 years that I was in college, you know, I had gained over 50 pounds. I want to say I gained like 65 pounds mm-hmm. over the 4 years of college. And I knew I didn't have the answers for myself because when I tried that summer after freshman year of
right.
doing CrossFit every day and like basically starving myself, to yeah. be completely honest, that was not something I could do as a lifestyle. It was in that appointment that she referred me to a nutritionist who was actually like in network and covered by my insurance because I was obese. Like they paid for it.
I know. When you hear the obese thing.
Oh my God.
I remember when I found out I was 208 pounds, I got a breast reduction because I was like, this is where I think I'm going to start.
Yes.
And I had to like go to the operating room. And that was like the first time I was weighed.
Wow.
And then I found out and I was like, oh, they took off 5 pounds of my boobs.
Yeah.
203, you
what
know.
What size were your boobs before?
I was a 38G.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I was a quadruple D, which I think is similar.
Probably, yes. Yeah, similar. And then I ended up, like, it started me on my journey of being like, I feel like I can look in the mirror and see the potential of what my body can be. But it's so interesting, that sense of self thing. It sounds like it had to be your parents that instilled this in you. And my mom always talks about this. Like, my sister and I were always overweight growing up. My sister was even
Same.
Heavier than I.
Yes.
It was in our genetic makeup, right? I had no chance. And my mom would tell us, like, we'd try on dresses and she'd be like, you guys are going to walk in and everyone is going to think you're the most beautiful women in the room. But I was like too rational or something and it didn't land with me. My sister, she did think she was like the most beautiful girl in the room. And she was like, I don't know what happened with you. But I wonder, do you know where yours came from?
Yeah, my mom and my dad and even my older brother are all so amazing in how they all allowed me to shine and like see myself in a way where I could shine.
Yeah.
I'll start with my mom. So my mom is a model. She recently passed about a year and a half ago, but truly my entire life I idolized her. And she was way taller than I am. she was just, again, like what people idolize in the fashion industry. She was a perfect hanger for any clothes. Like she truly, when you think of a model in the 80s and 90s, like that was my mom.
Yeah.
And she also had this larger than life personality. And it's funny because growing up, once I realized that I was different from my mom, I can think of specific memories right now. I'll never forget in sixth grade trying on a pair of my mom's jeans that were too small on me.
Yeah.
I was 11 years old.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like my mom's in her 40s at that point and she's smaller than I am as an 11-year-old.
I had those moments too where I would try on like a women's size 8 at like 12 and be like, well, if you never eat again, this will be normal in 10 years. Like I had those.
Everyone
thoughts.
Was obsessed with Abercrombie when we were growing up. I never fit into Abercrombie. I was straight to Abercrombie and Fitch.
I didn't fit into either one.
Yeah.
Those little singlets or whatever.
I mean,
or even limited two. Like,
yes.
Forget about it.
Yeah. Truly forget about
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my mom would watch these films and say, oh my gosh, you remind me so much of this beautiful actress. Or truly, like when Keeping Up with the Kardashians came out, she was like, oh my God, you'll never believe what Kim and Khloe were wearing. You need this outfit. Ugh. It was almost like the grass is always greener. She would say like how jealous she was of my boobs when I was in high school because she would always say she was a pirate's dream, a sunken chest, like truly flat chested. There was nothing to work with there. But I think that really helped me see that there is a spectrum of beauty. And while I idolized my mom and most of the world did, my mom idolized me. Ugh. And that was really special. And then I think about my dad, who has just always been an athlete. Truly, my dad bikes 60 miles a day.
So this isn't genetic for you.
So I would say I definitely get my dad's genes on like my metabolism, but my dad being such an athlete, it's just never like quote unquote caught up to him because of his lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I never had that lifestyle. So my dad figured out how to make it work in a way that he still has so much passion in, loving to bike. He's a big walker now. He used to be a marathon runner. Like he's just been so active that the weight never was able to stick.
Makes sense.
And my brother too, like if you look back, I can send you some pictures, you'll crack up. But my brother and I, not only did we have matching buck teeth, like truly I could like slurp 5 pieces of spaghetti through my teeth, but we also had like matching, you know, little like chubby phases.
Totally.
And Frankie outgrew that once he became a very competitive baseball player.
Oh.
I just never had the opportunity, but my dad growing up would always say, who's the prettiest girl in the whole wide world? And he would make me say Sammy. And I mean, we still kind of do it to this day. My dad has like a million and one nicknames for me, but he'll kind of just say it out loud. And it's this like autopilot, who's the prettiest girl in the whole wide world? Sammy.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's so important to instill this in your kids. And my mom really did. And my dad, like, it's just like Jewish criticism, right? Where like we put something on and he'd be like, are you guys sure you want to wear that? Because like I'm wearing something that's definitely too small.
Yes. And honestly, like I have received so much of that from other people in my family who, you know, would like feel my hips when I'm 16 years old and be like, whoa, Sam, like you shouldn't have this yet. Or they take me out to dinner and I'm on my like 4th piece of the bread basket. And they're like, you can have 1 or 2, but like you shouldn't be having more than that.
Yeah.
And like kind of these really like passive aggressive reminders where it wasn't this healthy conversation of sitting me down and saying, this isn't healthy. This is what can actually happen to your health and your lifespan if you continue down this route. It was more of these reflections of what they're dealing with in their own life.
Always.
And them shining that through. Oh yeah, like you shouldn't be having 4 pieces of bread at dinner.
Totally, totally. And it is like a Jewish thing where like we value looks. Unfortunately, I think it's like generational trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's interesting now, I call her Bubby, which is again a very Jewish thing, but my grandma on my mom's side, we have a really, really special relationship. And my entire childhood, I always remembered her saying to my mom, oh, honey, you're too thin. You're too thin. You're too thin. And it kind of replayed over in my brain. You're too thin. And she would say things to me, not in like an aggressive, mean way, but yeah, like Are you playing any sports? Like, talk to me about how you're moving and how you're eating. And I never realized it at the time, but that was her showing that she cared about my physique.
Totally.
And now that, you know, I'm a co-founder of a health and wellness platform and I've lost over 80 pounds, I go to visit her in Dallas and she's like, oh, Sam, you're too thin.
I knew it. Yeah.
And you know what I do? I show her videos of me doing chin-ups, videos of me doing hip thrusts with like 120 pounds, all of these videos of me working out and showing her what I've built with form. And she's like, oh my God. Oh, okay. Like, you're really muscular. That's a lot of muscle. I was never able to do that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of been this beautiful generational conversation of, I might look thin, but I'm actually just really strong.
It sounds like that was what the motivating factor for your weight loss was, where it was all health related and not physical. Yeah. And I think that that's maybe the secret sauce of like why it stuck for you.
Yeah, I knew, because I had tried so many quick fixes in the past that were really intense and very acute lifespan, like truly what we know as a yo-yo dieter.
Yeah.
Even back in high school, I was the biggest of all my friends. I tried the cookie diet. It was called Smart for Life. It was literally cardboard cookies. I did Jenny Craig.
Yeah,
me I keep too. Calling it Jenny Kane now because I love their sweaters. I wish that's what it was. I did Weight Watchers, and like those things have worked wonders for other people, but they never stuck for me.
I hated eating the packaged foods.
Oh my God. Yeah. And like counting the points. Like, yeah. I don't want to have to track every little thing I put in my mouth.
Yeah, because you're a foodie. Like, you'll put all your restaurant recs, I'm like saving.
Yeah, if you ever need an Austin or LA restaurant rec, please hit me up. But like, truly, I have an emotional, almost like religious relationship with food. I do think food is spiritual.
I think so.
Like, it's a very intentional thing that there's a lot of energy in it, like making your meals or picking what you want to eat and like grounding yourself before you eat and really being so present that I never allowed myself to have a negative relationship with food. And I knew anything that was going to stick had to be me still allowing myself to be the foodie that I know and love.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess like if anyone is trying to get on this journey with food, like where do you tell them to start?
I think nutrition is the most important place to start because you can crush yourself in the gym and do as many form workouts as you want, but nutrition is a really hard egg to crack, no pun intended. It is just something that you need to learn about yourself because there's so much bioindividuality in it. I actually work with a nutritionist.
You work with Shira.
I'm obsessed with Shira Barlow. Yeah. She is literally, I mean, her book is The Food Therapist. She is my therapist when it comes to food. And I think for someone like myself, I've actually noticed in, even in grieving my mom's life, that I've done a lot of reparenting through food. And food has actually been like a really big nurturer in my life. Mm-hmm. And this has taken years for me to realize and like years for me to figure out how to mitigate because it was a crutch for so long where I would go binge eat. And that was my sense of comfort that I wasn't necessarily getting from a parent. And if you are listening to this and you have a tricky situation with food, just know that there are resources that are openly available to you and you don't have to pay a nutritionist hundreds of dollars an hour. TikTok is a beautiful resource that I turn to a lot, but there's so many books out there. And I think Shira Barlow is a perfect place to start. She's really changed my life. And I think even back to the initial nutritionist that I worked with that was covered by my insurance, he put me on the keto diet, which I did for 2 years.
Worst.
It was a box. Like, I was a prisoner to a plan that was in no way going to last me a lifetime.
Did you eat a lot of cream cheese?
Oh my God. I mean, the fats are what saved me. And thank God I have a good relationship with dairy, which most people don't.
Yeah.
So really, you need to check in with self. And I think nutrition goes hand in hand with knowing yourself.
Yeah.
I think I was at a point where I didn't know myself, so I needed to live in a box and learn what is self-discipline. And keto taught me that real quick.
Yeah. The reparenting thing is interesting because I'm so about inner child work. And it's so interesting that whenever I'm having a bad day, that's my first.
Yeah.
And for me, my journey was like, I don't think you faced this, or maybe you did, but like once I lost weight, I became desirable to men in my head. And so I'd use like male validation as my new form of heal, right? Like of like feeding my soul.
Super vulnerable share. One of my very best friends from LA is actually staying with me right now. Uh-huh. And she lives in Australia now. So it's been like really nice to have her in Austin. And we've been doing a lot of reminiscing. And she knew me for about 3 years before I even met Andrew. Uh-huh. And over those 3 years, she saw me lose a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. I actually met Andrew, though, when I was like halfway through my journey. Mm-hmm. So I met Andrew when I was, just to use numbers, because I know people like numbers to measure, and I'm like that too. I had lost 50 pounds when I met Andrew. Since Andrew and I have been together, I've lost over another 30.
Wow.
He didn't meet me who I am today. He met a different version of me and fell in love with me. Which but before Andrew, thank you. You know, we all go through like our love languages, right? And my number one was always physical touch, which now I would say is actually probably my last love language.
Gifts and physical touch for me are not really it.
So my friend and I were doing a lot of reminiscing, and when I was on my journey and really learning myself and I was dating other men, physical touch was everything to me, but purely for validation. Mm-hmm. It gave me a sense of, oh, like you are beautiful because this person thinks you are through touching you physically. Like that's how they're validating that you are actually accepted in this world.
How do we program ourselves to think like that? It's because everything you're saying is landing with me.
Yeah.
That's so true. Yeah. And I had this thought where I was like, I would say this out loud. I would say, you guys, like if a man is going to sleep with me, he's going to see like the scars, the stretch marks, the cellulite, and he's not going to like me anymore.
Yeah.
I would say that to my friends.
Yeah. No, I mean, I identify with that so much. And I think looking back when I was dating, I didn't necessarily know who I was yet, let alone who I wanted to attract. And I'm so grateful that I had those experiences of truly experimenting with other humans and like understanding who saw me for what I knew I loved about myself, or who saw me in a way that was just validating something I was lacking.
Yeah.
And what's beautiful is by the time I met Andrew, I had done so much self-work that I knew my worth.
Yeah.
And I remember telling him, I mean, I fell in love with Andrew day one. It was love at first sight.
Did you tell anyone that? Because like the thing of that single women say is like, as soon as we tell someone, it's done. Like he ghosts or he goes away.
Yeah, no, that's such a good point. I actually do remember coming home after our first date and saying, I had met him in person at a birthday party. And then he asked me out on our first date. I remember coming home to my roommate after our first date and saying, if that's not my husband, I'm upset. And I think that was me kind of shying away from like, this is my person, but not wanting to call it out so directly.
Absolutely. And you'll live if it's not.
Yes.
You'll be like, I'm upset, but I won't die.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I remember, again, like super vulnerably just sharing some inner workings of Andrew and I in the early days. So we had our first date on a Friday. He asked me out again. We went on our second date on Saturday. Our third date was that following week, like midweek. And we drove out to Malibu, and I'll never forget coming home from Malibu Farm. And I remember saying, do you mind if we wait for the physical stuff? And this is our third date.
Yeah.
This is still week one.
You hadn't kissed?
We had kissed, but like we hadn't done anything else. And I think like in my previous dating scenarios, it did just move a bit quicker.
Totally.
And I remember asking Andrew in the car, like, it was kind of really like nerve-wracking for me to even say it, and it was out of left field, but I said, do you mind waiting for us to introduce all the physical stuff? Like, I just feel something that, like, I want to get to know you so well emotionally, and then, like, I'm so excited to get there. And he looked at me, and he was like, it's so interesting because I was thinking the same.
Oh, my God.
And he gave me such validation in a way that I had never been validated before by any man on this earth. And he said, I am feeling so strongly for you just in my feelings. And, of course, I'm so attracted to you and want that physical stuff. But I love this idea.
That's so wonderful. And someone honoring your boundaries and like validating them and making you feel seen for them is what you want to feel.
Andrew just did it differently in every way, shape, and form. And I think, too, by that point, I was 24 years old, I had already had years of self-work.
Yeah.
So much time developing who I am and what I identify as. And he had honestly done the same.
Wow.
So it was this beautiful moment of me actually looking at him, and it almost felt like me looking at myself in a mirror and his journey reflecting so much of mine in different ways. Like, he didn't have this big weight loss moment, but he had been building this career. He had exited a professional journey that was really traumatic and just a lot of finding himself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was like truly the first time in my life that I had felt that romantically.
What do you think about the saying? I go back and forth on this, but what do you think about the saying where, like, you have to love yourself to love someone else?
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, every part of me says yes to that.
Yeah.
And I think you'll always hear me say the most important relationship you have is the one with yourself.
Yeah.
And that rings so true to me because even now in a marriage, if I let go of my relationship with me and what I know my non-negotiables are to feel my best self,
yeah,
I can't be my best self to my partner.
It's so funny that you say this. One of my questions for you was like, what are your non-negotiables in your relationship with self in order to be the best partner to Andrew?
I fucking love this question. I could like pop off on this for an entire episode. But to do like the shortest version, movement. Like, when we go on a family vacation with my in-laws, who I am so lucky, like, I have the most incredible mother-in-law, the most amazing father-in-law, and I'm like best friends with my brother-in-law. But like, I think back to a trip we took this summer. I was doing a form workout every morning or going for a long walk alone mm-hmm. before all the family activities started. Movement for me is medicine.
How did you figure that out?
It took me a lot of trial and error of trying a lot of different types of movement. So I know I mentioned CrossFit early on.
Right.
That was like really intense and arguably not for me, but it actually made me feel really strong. And there was a really strong sense of community as well, which yeah. was nice. And then I actually started tapping into more like slower forms of movement. So yoga and Pilates.
Yeah.
But I will say when I was like 30% body fat or like 35% body fat doing Pilates, you're not really going to see the results.
I died at like Lori Harvey saying that she does Pilates and all the girls were like, I'll be Lori Harvey. I'm like, no, because like the base is there.
You need a base.
Yeah.
100%. You need a base.
Yeah.
And I think like I was truly killing myself on a megaformer like 4 times a week.
I hate megaformers.
I mean, it is the hardest workout.
It doesn't move. The machine does not
move. It is the most challenging workout.
Yeah.
But yes, I did not see results because I was carrying a lot of body fat.
Yeah.
A whole lot of body fat. So it was really my introduction to Sammy Clark, my now business partner, who is just, I would say, like the leader in allowing women of our generation to know that we can lift weights mm-hmm. and we're actually going to find the most feminine, beautiful strength within us. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get bulky. Like anyone listening to this who's afraid to lift because you think you're going to get bigger, coming from someone who is bigger than they wanted to be their entire life, it's actually going to make you the leanest version of yourself.
Yeah.
And I fell in love with her workouts. And my now husband, Andrew, actually grew up with her fiance, JT.
Wow.
So I was introduced to Sammy. I had already exited my influencer marketing agency at this time. It was during the pandemic. And she really knew that she needed to build something. I'm like, oh my God, like, please let me be a part of this. Like, you've truly changed my life. And here we are with Form.
Wow.
So movement to me is such a non-negotiable. Now I would say meditation, which for the longest time, I was really afraid of meditation.
Me too. I would say like, I would tell my therapist like, I know I need to do it. I know. And she's like, no, you choose to.
Yeah.
Once it became a choice, it was different.
Yeah.
Instead of me being like, well, the gurus say right. I need to meditate.
Well, I think we all think of meditation as you sitting there for an hour,
yeah.
like literally just in silence and like sitting on a pillow. Like we all have that vision, but that's not the way I practice.
Yeah.
And my therapist actually told me, if you're afraid of meditating, you're actually the one who needs it most.
Mm.
So that feels like you, then I would say start, but don't feel like you need to be that guru on the pillow in complete silence for hours at a time.
I only do guided meditations.
I only do guided. So we have a woman named Roxy Nafusi, who is a very well-known author. She wrote a book called Manifest.
Was she on your podcast?
She was.
Yes, yeah. That episode was great.
Yeah, she is just like the opposite of woo. Like there's no woo to exist. It is just like straight practical manifestation advice. Yeah. And she actually does 5-minute affirmations that we have on the Form app. We have different versions of them. So one's specific to career, one specific to body image, one specific to gratitude. You name it, you can kind of take your pick. Mm-hmm. And I do them outside on my balcony every morning, first thing, before I even brush my teeth. I put on my robe, I go outside. My dog usually joins me, and Andrew will join me sometimes too. And it regulates the shit out of me.
Do you think that you had like a vision of that life for yourself? Like, it almost feels like you've manifested like your home. When I like see it on social media, I'm just like, that feels like a home. Even when I've like had my vision, when I was in LA debating my move in Austin, I'd be like, that girl Sammy with that big tree, her house, like
the tree has lived a life. And it's honestly what sold us on the house.
Yeah.
We knew we wanted to feel really grounded in Austin. And I think a lot of times people buy a home and they're like, this is the perfect place to host. And we actually had the opposite intention. We needed a sanctuary.
Yeah.
Like truly, if someone's religious listening to this, I imagine it's what you feel from like your church or your synagogue or whatever place you go. Our home is our sanctuary. And even my friend who's visiting with us right now, yesterday was Monday. We had a full work day. And she was like, oh my God, I just realized I haven't left the house today. I haven't left your house. We did a form workout in my gym in the morning. And then we're all kind of working in different areas of the house all day. And I go, those are my favorite days. Where when I lived in LA, if I didn't leave the house, I was cuckoo crazy.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
Like, and when I started working with a life coach, she had me rate my different aspects of my life. My home environment was a 2.
Yeah, I would say mine's a 10 out of 10.
That's amazing.
And every aspect to it. Like, truly, have you read Atomic Habits by James Clear?
No, I'm reading The Mountain Is You right now.
Ooh, okay, I need to read that. That's actually on my list. So do Atomic Habits next, and you'll actually probably pick up on a lot of patterns that you had when you were on your weight loss journey, because it's just about making small habits that add up to big change. And I think we set our house up to remind us of the things that we actually do want to do every day. So back to my non-negotiables, I have my full supplement cabinet that's actually what's meant to be a bar in our house. So we have this like beautiful area that is fully meant for alcohol, but I actually don't drink anymore. And not to like label myself as sober, I just choose to not really dabble in alcohol. And this bar now has all of our supplements. It also has all of the tea that we love, all the coffee that we love. It's just this area that we can start our days and like feel our best self.
Yeah.
And that's another non-negotiable for me, is figuring out what works for me and doing it for me, not doing it because someone else told me to do it. Like even me telling you need to read Atomic Habits, check in with self before you take that book recommendation.
Well, read it. And if I don't want to finish it, I won't be like, it's because Sammy said it's going to change my
life.
But I
think like even with my social media, like I recommend supplements left and right because what they do for me.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's where I struggle with social media, is it's been like a very new journey for me sharing and like being vulnerable online. And it's actually been something I feel an immense passion for. And I actually feel like through other women sharing their stories with me, my otherness that I felt in my life is actually making my previous self feel so seen through other people's stories like yours.
Yeah. I feel the same way.
It's a really beautiful gift.
It is.
And I think a lot of the time though, what can happen is a lot of women will ask me for my blueprint. How did you lose over 80 pounds? I need to do this for myself. How did you do it?
Yeah.
And I can give these suggestions of start with nutrition, then find the movement that works for you, and then maybe start to meditate, do your blood work, figure out how you want to supplement to feel your best self based on what you're deficient in. But at the end of the day,
yeah,
there is no blueprint.
it's your journey.
It's your
to
journey.
Getting there. Yeah. I'm like on the internet where I'm like, I can make you feel seen for being single and 30.
Yeah.
But you have to date the douchebags. You have to
ghosted. Oh my God. I dated a dozen douchebags, kissed so many frogs.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a quote that I always come back to and remind my single friends. It's either a good time or a good story. And if you're lucky, it's both.
That's so good.
So if it's a good time and you actually like the person, amazing. But if it's the worst date of your life, guess what? It's also the best story of your life.
We get to have dinner and like tell each other. Yes.
Like 100%. I fully was catfished a ton of times. And those are the funniest stories that now as a married woman, I look back to and laugh at. I'm like, oh my God, remember that one time when?
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for those stories. So just remind yourself, it's either a good time or a good story. And yeah, if you're lucky, it can be both.
Do your single friends say that dating in Austin is not great?
I think it is a little tough.
Yeah.
I think in Austin, my favorite thing about it in coming from LA is that there's a lot of really big fish in a small pond.
Yeah.
But the small pond is really small. Like, we're living in a puddle here.
Totally.
So, like, small town, lots of connections.
Yeah.
One of my best friends literally just got love bombed.
Me too.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe by the same person.
Okay. Well, I'm like, actually, like, we should chat offline. Yes. Because this person has now been seen with like four other girls doing the same shit.
Oh my God. It has to be. We have to find out. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, God, like, I'm honestly grateful that it is a small town so that people can share their experiences. And yeah. I also think that like a biggest perk of Austin, Texas being a small town is that it attracts really wholesome people who do have a bit more traditional values than a place like LA.
Totally. Totally. And there isn't that like, what do you do?
No.
Who's your dad?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It's a lot of like, oh, like, what do you actually want from your life?
Yes.
Like, what work have you done?
It's a good place to find yourself. I tell everyone it's like millennial camp because like we're on these journeys of like finding ourselves. And then sometimes like we'll walk on the lake and see each other or we'll do activities.
10 pickleball. CPG founders on every corner. And they're all like, it has that same passion I talked about with LA, which I am fucking obsessed with.
Yeah.
And I think is so contagious.
Yeah.
But it also has this traditional sense of like, no, people actually do cherish relationships. And it's not everyone looking for this bright, shiny object or model on every corner like in LA.
I agree 100%. Yeah. I want to talk to you about grief because I think that when I was like, I have to have her on the podcast, is I was listening to you on Sif Haters podcast. Mm. And I started crying, Sammy. I was doing my hair and I was crying. And then I was like, I need to call my mom. Mm, and I made my mom and sister listen to your episode on Sif's podcast. You mentioned you lost your mom. I'm so sorry. I can't imagine the loss that you went through.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, my heart's still broken and like, I don't think it'll ever be full again to the extent that it was. Mm-hmm. And I think I really am in this like meaning-making season. And I think for anyone listening to this, if you still have your mom around, call her.
Yeah.
Tell her you love her because you never know when you're not going to be able to make that phone call again.
Yeah.
I actually have a lot of voicemails and text messages saved for my mom because, I think one of the hardest things is just, like, having access.
Yeah.
And, like, accepting the fact that I can't just pick up the phone and call my mom anymore. And I think what's been such a blessing that I've learned to find out is, gosh, my brother really has so many of those same qualities.
Really?
And, like, being able to just call him and, like, get that sense of my mom in a different way, obviously. But having a sibling through this time has been such a godsend. But my mom suddenly died. I did not know that was going to happen. It's not like she had a terminal illness that we were all by her hospital bedside, you know, like sending her off for. Like, it was traumatic. Mm-hmm. Like, really, really kind of what I always feared my entire life.
Yeah.
Growing up, my mom had a difficult relationship with alcohol. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've mentioned that food has been a crutch for me. I think there's a bit of genetics in that my mom had other ways of coping. Mm-hmm. And I think even as like the younger version of me, I always feared and worried her health. Like, I was always really paranoid, truly, day in and day out. I have memories of being in middle school, scared to death, and like calling her all the time just to check in.
Wow.
And truly, I mean, like the way she passed and how I learned of her passing was my biggest nightmare come true, and like something that I feared my entire life, like truly became my reality. And I could not accept it for the longest time. And I would ask the universe, why me? Why did you do this to me? Like, I miss my mom. I want my mom.
Yeah.
And if anyone can relate to that, I want you to know that time gives you the opportunity to reflect, to reframe, and to find meaning in why things happen. And that was December 2022. We're now in April 2024. And it's still something I'm working through day in and day out, but I don't look at this as something that happened to me. I look at this as something that happened for me.
Wow.
And I don't look at this and say, this is my biggest nightmare come true. I look at this and say, wow, my mom had a contract with this universe. She was brought in and she was let go. And I still have her.
Yeah.
Like, I think, you know, this is actually something really interesting. In the Jewish traditions, you bury the dead as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. And we believe that their soul, it takes time, but their soul slowly but surely leaves them. Mm-hmm. And that's why you don't cremate in mm-hmm. the Jewish tradition. And my mom's sister, my aunt, I call her Auntie J, we're really close. She was making the pamphlet of the funeral, the celebration of life. I fucking hate the word funeral. Like, yeah. You'll never hear me use it. But at my mom's celebration of life, I actually used a picture. I sent Auntie J everything. There was no way I was going to be able to make that pamphlet. And yeah. I think Auntie J found the strength that a lot of us lacked and helped. And we created, you know, like the signs, the pamphlet. There's so much that you need to do when people pass.
Yeah.
And there was just zero opportunity for me to have an ounce of any sense of self to be able to do that. And I had this gut feeling and I said, Auntie J, I want to use pictures from my mom's modeling career. I don't want to use the most recent picture because I know this is when my mom had the strongest sense of self. And not only that, I don't want there to be any dates on not only her tombstone, but I don't want there to be any dates anywhere at her celebration of life. You know, you typically see like the year they're born and the year they physically leave. Because I knew immediately that my mom is still here. And I think what does bring my brother and I peace is that she wasn't living her best life anymore.
Yeah.
And the rest of her life wasn't going to be to the caliber to which she knew she wanted to live a big life and she lived a really big life. And my brother said a few weeks after, like, I actually feel her more now than I did before.
Wow.
And she's with us through everything. Like, I know she's hearing me right now. And that is like a strong belief I carry. I don't think of ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Like, I know that her soul and her legacy and just everything is living on through me. And that's allowed me to have a lot more acceptance around it. But yeah, I mean, my heart is still so broken. And I do think that I look at life through a lens of loss. And everything I do matters more now.
Yeah.
Because I know how fragile life is. And yeah. I know how quickly we can lose our loved ones. Even before I came here to record today, there's no world where I'm leaving Andrew and my dog Bagel without giving them each a big kiss and sharing so much love for them. So if anyone's listening to this and maybe you're in a relationship or whether it's with a family member, a friend, a partner, a coworker that just leaves you unsettled, I look at those situations as opportunities of looking at them through the lens to which I now have of this could be any of our last moments. Make yourself proud.
I think that's so beautiful. And thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful and made me really think about the problems that we think we face on a day-to-day and really like what is so important is those connections that you have and like ensuring that people know that they're loved by you.
Yeah.
I know I don't do a good job of it as a daughter and wish I... Yeah. And there's always room to...
Being a daughter is hard. I will say, like, my mom and I had a rough road.
Yeah.
And I think what's also been such a beautiful gift of this time is loving her. Like, I loved her through it all, but, like, loving her so deeply now.
Yeah.
And focusing on all the good things now.
Yeah.
But also not shying away from the real shit that happened.
Mm.
Because that plays into who you are now.
Yeah.
And, like, you heard me use the phrase reparenting. A lot of that work stems from the relationship my mom and I had.
Yeah.
And it's deep work that has allowed me to reach a point in my life where I can hopefully be that much more relatable to others and that much more strong and resilient for myself.
Yeah.
And it's only because of the experiences that my life has given me.
Yeah. And I think that so much of our sense of self comes in through the growth. Mm. So this is your new phase of growth where you're like, yeah, I'm learning how to be this person.
Yeah. I think change is really scary, but I've, like, redefined it in my brain as growth, because when we look at growth, it's something we want to run towards, right? So if there's anything in anyone's life that feels like drastic change, whether it's a move, whether it's a loss, whether it's a new job, whatever that is, yeah, don't shy away from it. Run towards it and know that it's actually the growth that you're looking for.
Yeah. Our first instinct is to shy away from it.
Yeah.
I was interviewing someone on my podcast who's now become a friend. Mm. And he's like, he was telling me a story about how his ex-girlfriend, like, moved on, and he was seeing photos of her being really happy. And he's like, I want to see those photos. I don't want to block those photos. I want to really teach myself, like, what it feels like to feel that pain. I don't want to run from that pain.
Wow. I mean, that's powerful.
I think that's really powerful.
That's really powerful. And I wonder too, if it's like them seeing maybe the mistakes that they made in that relationship.
Totally.
And like taking those learnings and knowing that happiness does exist and you can't. I think this also goes back to like having our independence in relationships, is knowing that like that relationship with self is what you're always going to have. And that's why it's the most important relationship.
Yeah.
And like other relationships can leave us. They can be fleeting. Like knowing that your entire identity is not trapped into a relationship and that we can move on and be happy, and so can they. And not looking at that through a lens of judgment, yeah, but looking at it with this acceptance of, wow, life goes on.
Totally.
Yeah.
What's something that you wouldn't have gotten through this without? It sounds like your brother.
My brother and Andrew. I feel like Andrew was not only my husband during this, but he was also like my brother's rock.
Wow.
And in our like wedding video, you know, during our wedding, there was so much beauty that happened. And I honored my mom so much in all that we did. Like there were so many specific moments that I did to honor my mom. And I'll never forget my brother's speech and him saying, you know, my mom passed away 4 months before my wedding, or 4 months suddenly. Like it reframed the intention of our wedding. Like obviously it was to celebrate the union of Andrew and I, but it also became this family affair to honor the life of my mom.
Of course.
And Andrew wanted that too. And Frankie, my brother, during his speech said, you know, these have been the hardest months of my life. My brother is the one who found my mom.
Oh my God.
And these have been like truly the hardest months of my life. And Andrew, you have been my rock. And like for me to hear that from my older brother and my best friend about the guy that I just married and like I'm now sitting next to, nothing could be more affirming that I made the right decision, because relationships and friendships that are there for you to support you in your happiest moments are really important. But the relationships that help you during your darkest hours, during the time where you're suddenly losing the woman who gave you life, and not only doing that for you, but also your brother. Like, Andrew is my fucking soulmate. And, like, that was the most clear affirmation of that I've ever felt.
I think for me, what I'm hearing is, like, if it's not Andrew, it's not it.
Oh, I mean, that's been such a gift for so many of my girlfriends, is them, like, reframing what they need in their partner through witnessing Andrew and how he supports me.
Yeah.
And I remember saying week one of our relationship, like truly week one. And, you know, having said like after date one, I knew I wanted to marry this guy, but like truly after we had had a couple of dates, I said to my friend, Andrew is loving me and making me feel loved and appreciated in the way that I feel like I do for everyone else.
Wow.
And I never really felt that in life.
Wow. I love that reframe.
Yeah.
Because I value my friendships and my connections so much that I want someone to be like, even in my manifest, I have this manifestation list of this man. I'm like,
I get it. That's so cute.
I put it under my pillow. We'll see.
Oh my gosh.
But I want him to like value his friends the way I value my friends.
Yes.
I want him to have those relationships and care so deeply about the connections that he
makes. And look how he treats his friends. Look how he treats his family.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, like anyone can put on a front, but the way people treat others says everything about them. I actually reposted a quote yesterday that said, I don't care how rich you are. I don't care how successful you are. I don't care how big your house is, what car you drive. I care how you make people feel.
Yeah.
That says everything about you.
I agree.
Yeah.
Sammy, what's like next for you? Like, what are you working on right now that you're so excited about?
Gosh, I feel like even me sharing this, like the reason why I'm still crying is because I don't say it often, and like I don't really like open my heart up to this extent as much as I have in the last couple of months ever, but I've actually found it to be insanely therapeutic. So thank you for giving me a platform to do it.
For coming here and doing it. I think it's so special, and I think you do such a wonderful job at it.
Thank you. I think it's just more of this, like I do really now understand that, again, this didn't happen to me, it happened for me. Mm-hmm. So how can I reframe everything I do to share as much as possible so that my old self, who didn't know how life was going to go on, can hear a story of inspiration to reaffirm people that life does go on and that you're going to look back at this with a whole new lens on life.
Yeah.
And I'm just so grateful to have had the trauma. Like it's like this like post-traumatic like growth, right?
I think it's an impossible task to think about, but I think it's the only way forward.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta power through.
Yeah.
But it's fucking hard.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Tell everyone where they can find Form and you on social, because your socials are so fun.
Oh, thank you. So I'm definitely an Instagram girly. You can find me at Sammy Spalter. And then Form is just at Form. We have our podcast at Transform. And then our new activewear line is at Shop Form. So across the board, got my hands on a ton of things, but moments like this and conversations like this are truly what I'm the most excited about.
I'm so grateful you came on. I'm so grateful we connected. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Pretty Much Done. If you want more information about this episode, you can check our show notes. Go like, subscribe, and leave a review because it helps us grow the pod. Love you. Thank you. Sorry, did I just love bomb you? I'm not toxic. You are. Okay, bye.